This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 13th of April 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 12th of April 2018, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are two independent shops to close, rescue work set to start, and pop star supports charity at transgender conference. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
Two independent shops are set to close, but the City Council says High Street is evolving and healthy. Two independent Winchester shops trading for more than 100 years will close as a result of spiralling rates, rents and reductions in revenue. Creative Crafts and Wilds Sports have been forced to close as a result of what they say are untenable business conditions in the city, created by unprecedented levels of rent and rate increases. However, that is contrasted by the launch of a new shoe shop, Pavers, in the square, as well as chicken restaurant Barcelos, which looks set to open on Dury Street soon. A senior councillor said the closures were part of a natural evolution and that the High Street remained strong. Wild Sports, founded in 1927 with a shop in Winchester since the 1940s, has gone into administration. In a statement, owner Danny Quanter blamed the rise in business rates, the growth of online shopping, the Christmas market deterring regular customers, and an increase in parking rates. People used to come to Winchester because the shops were different to other high streets. Our closure makes it harder for other independents. With so many of us going, the city hasn't got what made it special anymore. It's not what it used to be. Creative Crafts have been a fixture for more than 30 years, with current owner Lynn Simmons taking over in 2002. Miss Simmons said, "This has been on the card since last summer. It's not something that has happened just like that. My rates have gone up 50% and my rent is very high, with the pressure of people turning to the internet to shop Creative Crafts in its current form, which will no longer exist. I know of at least three other independents which are likely to close by the end of the year." She said she had been overwhelmed by the depth of feeling from customers and locals and wished to thank everyone for their well wishes. Creative Crafts will continue to have a Winchester market stall. Catherine Turnis, Executive Director of Winchester BID, said, "It is always sad to hear of businesses leaving their stores, but I am pleased to hear both will be continuing their businesses online and exploring other avenues. Diversifying retail models is absolutely necessary in today's climate, especially as consumers will continue to have the power on where and how they shop. We are shortly releasing a series of blogs which have revealed practices in a dozen independent businesses that report year-on-year profit increases. Their success is enhanced by their efforts on staff training, digitalising their business and reducing costs. We hope learning from fellow businesses, coupled with the launch of a £50,000 annual fund for independent BID businesses, will help protect those that currently contribute to Winchesterness. As for the Cathedral Christmas Market, There is certainly a view from some BID members who sell high-end products that the Christmas market visitors are a different clientele to their usual customers, and so it is important the key policymakers work with the Cathedral and the BID and continue to invest in improving access to encourage regular shoppers and customers to continue to visit at this crucial time of year. City Councillor Guy Ashton, portfolio holder for finance, said, "I don't think that the store closures are the result of something that the council has or hasn't done. It's a natural evolution of the changing habits of shoppers and the natural evolution of the high street. The council provided a rate relief scheme to several businesses over the summer, something that many councils didn't do. When we reduced the amount of parking in Friars Gate, we found that business footfall actually increased." He added, "I'm passionate about the variety and vibrancy of the high street. I'm sure new businesses will take the place of Wilds and Creative Crafts, and I hope they will be successful. But if you count the amount of new businesses coming into Winchester, they outweigh the ones leaving." A spokesperson for Hampshire Chamber of Commerce said, "The retail sector has always been a fast-moving environment and is experiencing a significant change as customers' habits alter. Retailers that embrace change and have invested in online as well as creating experiences in their stores will continue to have a place in our changing city centre environments. Others will have to reinvent themselves or face similar difficulties."
Rescue work set to start. Crucial work to restore Winchester's historic water mill began this week with the medieval oak beams being exposed for the first time in more than 270 years. The urgent project will see the Winchester City Mill's permanent floor removed to repair the failing beams following a successful fundraising campaign. Dating back well over 1,000 years, the mill lies in the heart of the ancient capital of England and had weathered the course of time until the building suffered huge flood damage in 2014. Surveys revealed that many of the ancient beams were in a bad state of decay, and the mill's conservation charity quickly put temporary measures in place until funds could be raised for a permanent solution, keeping the landmark open to the public. The repairs are set to last until early July, but today, and that means Thursday this week, the crucial stage of the restoration work takes place. A large section of the floor lying directly above the River Itchen will be removed, exposing the deteriorated oak beams and the basement below. The last time the mill would have seen work like this was during restoration in 1744 by James Cook, the mayor of Winchester and leaseholder of the mill at that time. A mill has stood on the site since Saxon times, but the present structure dates back to the 18th century. During the project, the mill will be offering half-price entry to allow people to see the important conservation work progressing over the next few weeks from the mill's special viewing platform. A spokesman for the National Trust said, "This is a rare opportunity to discover how the National Trust is using traditional conservation techniques to save this unique part of Winchester's heritage for future generations." I beg your pardon. The conservators will preserve as much of the building's historic fabric as possible, whilst grafting on a new oak supporting structure to take the weight of the building. Throughout the work, the mill's shop and South Downs Gateway information area will also be fully open.
Popstar supports charity at Transgender Conference. It's not every day that an international pop star visits Winchester to show support for transgender support charity Chrysalis. Animatronic, lead singer of the American band The Scissor Sisters, has taken up a role of patron to the Wasatch-based charity, which held a conference in the city this week. She appeared at her first assignment at the gathering aimed at bringing together Hampshire's transgender community, educating professionals and raising awareness of the struggles faced by trans people. Anna has been campaigning and supporting the LGBTQ plus community for much of her life, one of the reasons being that her father was gay and died of AIDS in 1990. She got involved with Chrysalis when a close friend, Kaz Cashmore, and her partner, who is a volunteer for Chrysalis, were victims of a homophobic attack by neighbours. Anna told the Chronicle, "My parents always taught me that it was our responsibility to make the world a better place, and it was clear to me that the way I would do this would be through campaigning for LGBT rights. A drag club for a trans person is often the first place where they are able to be their authentic self. It is a safe place for people to explore their sexuality and gender identity. But what I want for every person on this earth is to be able to live authentically in society at large and not be in fear of discrimination and harm. I can't consider myself as part of the LGBT community without addressing the issues that trans people face." The sold-out conference featured several speakers, including a farewell from the founder, Diane Yexley, who retired recently to be replaced by CEO Andy Maratos. Ms. Maratos said, "Our beneficiaries often say they wouldn't still be here if it weren't for Chrysalis and Diane." For more details about Chrysalis, email info@chrysalis-gii.co.uk.
That concludes the headline stories, and we now move on to the death announcements. Clark, Sylvia Clark, on the 30th of May, aged 78. Davis, Peggy Edna Davis, née Varney, on the 25th of March, aged 92. Countess Temple of Stowe, Elizabeth, Countess Temple of Stowe, born Elizabeth Scarfe, at home on the 4th of April, aged 89. Finlayson, Mary Finlayson, at Ashgate Hospice, Chesterfield, on the 6th of April, aged 45. Gota, Anthony Gota, on the 26th of March at Winchester Hospital, aged 86. Rothwell, Brian John Rothwell, at home on the 30th of March. Sylvester, Marion Shirley Sylvester, in hospital on the 31st of March. Westbrook, Priscilla Westbrook, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, on the 19th of March. And now we have Christian comment.
This week it is written by Rosemary A. Baker, and she entitles it "Exploring Doubt to Nurture Faith." Last Sunday, the Gospel reading was from St. John and described two of Jesus' post-resurrection appearances. Firstly, to the frightened disciples, hiding away, but without Thomas, and then a second time when Thomas was present. We are told that when they recounted what had happened, Thomas didn't believe them. He said he had to see with his own eyes and touch Jesus' wounds himself in order to believe. It is because of this that Thomas is often referred to as Doubting Thomas. As I was taking a service on this day and charged with preaching a sermon, I chose to offer what is called a narrative sermon and spoke of his as if I was Thomas, looking back at his life. I used clues from the other references to Thomas from the Gospels to build my picture. Thomas, also known as Didymus, meaning the twin, came to be a follower of Jesus because of his twin, St. Matthew, a tax collector. Jesus had asked him to be a follower and had eaten at his house with other tax collectors and sinners. I suspected that Thomas was not convinced initially, but went along to find out more. As he with the other disciples followed Jesus throughout his ministry, he saw him heal countless people, still the storm, and even walk on water. He saw Jesus raise Lazarus from the dead, but still doubted that Jesus himself had risen from the dead. Growing up in the Christian faith, I was not encouraged to share my doubts or to ask deep, searching questions. I believe that this is probably the case for most denominations. We are told that we should have faith, as if this is the opposite to doubt, whereas they can actually be complementary to each other. It is, I believe, by exploring our doubts that our faith grows and becomes more mature. We may not find answers to all our questions, but we understand their context and learn that they are not all of equal importance. In his 1981 book, Stages of Faith, James W. Fowler developed a theory of six stages that people go through as their faith matures, based on the Piaget stages of cognitive development and Kohlberg's stages of moral development. These have been further explored and written about over the years. The basic theory can be applied not only to those in traditional faiths, but to those who follow alternative spiritualities or secular worldview as well. The interesting fact about these stages is that people do not necessarily progress from one stage to another, and many remain stuck at one level. Sermons about doubt are not perhaps the best way to challenge growth, but they can at least recognise that doubt is not necessarily bad. The congregation, as the general population, will hold people of different personalities and thinking styles, and allowance will be made for those and for this. It would, I believe, be helpful for recognition of the different types to be taught more widely. Doubting Thomas went on to be a missionary to India.
We now have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've got quite a crop of letters this week on a variety of topics as always, so we'll start off now
with the first one, which is entitled False Economy from A. Smith. Sir, I read with interest the moanings of council leader Roy Perry about the lack of money available to fix the pothole plague currently destroying the tyres and suspension of Winchester motorists, mine included, as well as breaking the faces of unwitting cyclists and blaming it on the beast from the east, Chronicle April the 12th. Are we supposed to feel sorry for the poor council and their huge bill for compensation because they couldn't be bothered to properly surface the main routes into Winchester in the first place? I think not. The roads have been crumbling away for a long time before the snow hit. Pitt Roundabout has more trenches than the Somme. Eastern Lane is like the surface of the moon. Stockbridge Road near Waitrose is terrible. Chilbolton Avenue is awful, and Wales Street has more ups and downs than the Alps. The roads need to be properly resurfaced, not patched up and botched. It's a false economy to carry on like this. So writes A. Smith, Loudon Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Pothole neglect, writes Derek Grayson. I don't need to tell you what this is about. So, the pothole repairs in Hampshire are of such a poor standard that they are often breaking apart within days. There is, or was, a council employee whose job entails ensuring all contractors' work reaches a satisfactory standard before handing over our hard-earned money. This person, the contractors and councillors, such as Councillor Fiona Mather, who justified the status quo by saying Surrey's roads are worse than ours, should be replaced along with the person who came up with the idea of placing patronising road signs around the county, informing us that Hampshire County Council is maintaining our roads. Plainly, they are not. Written by Derek Grayson, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
And Paul Twelftree writes, "There's still time." Sir, in your article, Road Diversion Row Reignited, regarding the proposed closure and diversion of the Andover Road, you state that Winchester City Council Corporate Director Steve Tilbury has, quote, dashed hopes, unquote, as mentioned in the Chronicle of April the 5th. While Mr. Tilbury has pointed out that the closure forms part of the planning consent, he has confirmed that there is indeed a mechanism involving Keller Homes and the City and County Councils by which this can be changed. This subject is very close to my heart, as I have been leading the campaign to save the Andover Road, known initially as Star, for some years. I have found that the majority of residents in my area, St. Barnabas Ward, recognise that diverting the road will cause traffic delays, which will force vehicles to use Hairstock, Wick, Berwick, and also the Stockbridge Road to avoid the slower, longer diversion through the new estate. Continuing to call for the road to be closed is reckless and directly contrary to the best interests and quality of life of the residents of North Winchester and the surrounding area. If there is a political will to save the Andover Road, then a political solution will be found, and I'm sure common sense will prevail. So writes Paul Twelftree, Conservative candidate of St Barnabas Ward, Burrison Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Jeff Naylor has written a letter entitled Beastly Plans for Bluebell Wood. Sir, bluebells will flower later than normal this year. This is because of the recent beast from the east cold weather. They are likely to be at their best at the time of the local council elections on May the 3rd. One of the most spectacular bluebell woods open to the public around the South Hampshire conurbation is Upper Barn Copse, owned by the Woodland Trust. This ancient woodland is easily accessible on public footpaths from Fair Oak and Bishopstoke. However, this spring may be the last chance to see them in all their glory, as there is another permanent beast from the east coming. Beastly plans from Eastleigh Borough Council that threaten to build 5,200 houses, partly on adjoining meadows, and construct a new major road to the M3 at Albrook. This development, if it goes ahead, will have an adverse and irreversible impact on this splendid wood and our beautiful bluebells. That's from Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Colon Common.
Councillor Brian Lamming writes about empty homes. Sir, I am pleased to see that officers are now calling for an empty house policy. This is something I have been requesting for a few years now. I have repeatedly asked about the number of empty houses in council, and what is the Conservative administration going to do about it? I have one house in Badger Farm that has been unoccupied for about 9 years, and is now in a very bad state. It is, in my opinion, a blight on the neighbourhood. This house, after much pressure from me, is now the subject of an application for an empty dwelling management order. This is the first one that Winchester has applied for. At the first hearing, the owner was given leave to fulfil certain actions which, if not achieved by May the 11th, means the house will come under the control of Winchester City Council. It has taken a great deal of effort to achieve this result, partly due to the lack of will by Councillor Godfrey's administration. The City Council does have powers to use, but needs political will to use them. Written by Councillor Brian Lemming, Lib Dem, Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward, Wheatland Close, Badger Farm.
Sharon Montgomery asks, gone too far? Sir, I refer to the article in last week's Chronicle of April the 5th entitled, Praise After Waste Bins Disappear. Yes, I heartily agree. Trade waste bins made Winchester's alleys and back lanes unsightly and malodorous and had to be dealt with. And the council tackled them with good sense, communicating with the businesses involved and providing alternative sites for waste. But has this success gone to their heads? I now find that the council's three-bottle recycling bins in the cathedral outer close are to be removed. I am one of many who find these centrally located recycling bins useful. I can drop off bottles on my walk to the shops. After April the 14th, I will have two alternatives. Take a longer route into town in order to pass the remaining bottle bank, or save up the bottles until I drive to an out-of-town supermarket recycling facility. Thus, an excellent project risks shooting itself in the foot by going too far. The recent Winchester Town Forum meeting was told the reason for removing the council's own bins was to avoid accusations of hypocrisy, despite the inevitable consequence of an increase in litter. In my view, the glass recycling bins in the close are not intrusive. They have been well kept and form a necessary part of the urban landscape, demonstrating the city's commitment to recycling and care for the environment. Sharon Montgomery, Peninsula Square, Winchester.
Karen Barrett writes about election time. Sir, it is understandable that Karen McCleary is irritated when an electioneering Liberal Democrat councillor implies that he was responsible for the installation of the Abbotsworthy History Board, Chronicle Letters, April the 5th. If, on the other hand, Lib Dem politicians want to take credit for projects in which their participation was genuinely instrumental, they might cast their minds back to their coalition days, when their votes enabled the Conservatives to push through a whole range of disastrous policies. Apart from the huge increase in tuition fees, Lib Dem MPs also supported the disastrous Health and Social Care Act, paving the way for increasing NHS privatisation, as well as being complicit in an austerity agenda which has imposed enormous hardship on those least able to afford it. I'm sick of hearing the party's same tired justification for going into coalition, namely that they had no choice and that they forced compromises on their Tory colleagues. They conveniently ignore the fact that the Conservative Party did not have an overall majority and, as a minority government, wouldn't have been in a position to implement the policies which have had such a devastating effect on public services and living standards without Lib Dem support. That letter is from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Anna Taylor writes, victim of crime. Sir, there has been a spate of street crime in Winchester. Much of it goes unreported, which is a great pity because there is often CCTV that records crime as it takes place. Recently, I was followed and relieved of my purse and credit cards. It began at the bottom of town where I was aware of a woman in an oversized khaki coat, all the better to conceal stolen goods, and a wool hat pulled down low. By the time I'd reached shop two, she was next to me, at the till, free to observe the content and mechanism of my handbag. Now, I am no fool, and I was alert, but it did me no good. In shop three, a charity shop, she neatly positioned herself so that I had to squeeze past her. With a master stroke of flair, her distraction technique was a handbag held at shoulder height and a low bow as she dipped into my bag and relieved me of cash and credit cards. At the bank, they said I was the third customer that afternoon. On the stolen card credit line, I learnt they had tried to use my card. I called the police and received an email by return to say that they would not be investigating. I cannot help but wonder if this is a policy decision, as the email arrived with great speed. I have made a formal request for the police to reconsider this course of action. I believe that I was targeted because it was obvious to the artful dipper that I cannot see very well. If you are blind and partially sighted, you are more likely to be a victim of crime. It might be an opportunistic crime, and it might be hate-filled crime. Sorry to say, I know what it's like to be on the receiving end of both of these. The charity shop manager, where I was robbed, told me that charity shops are particular targets for street gangs and that they are brazen. She told me that they follow and target easy pickings. That's people like me and older shoppers. As the tourist season is upon us and the town fills up with busloads of older people with disposable income to spend in Winchester, let's hope the powers that be have a change of heart, that the police have enough resources to address this, and that no one need fear that they will be robbed blind, ha-ha, because they are an easy target. Well, that letter was written by Anna Taylor, Hatherley Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Now here's our old friend Keith Webb, and he writes about badgers and TB. Sir, your correspondent Anne Gosling, in letters from April the 5th, deplores the projected shooting of badgers. There is almost overwhelming evidence that badgers pass on TB to cattle, which has a devastating effect on farmers, as any animals testing positive have to be slaughtered. Those who protest at reducing badger numbers are now to be faced with a dilemma. Because evidence is now emerging that one of the reasons why hedgehog numbers in the countryside are suffering is that badgers are to blame. This is due to several factors, among them that badgers eat some of the same food that hedgehogs eat, but also that badgers kill and eat hedgehogs. Badger numbers seem to be on the increase if roadkill evidence is to be believed. The other day, on a longish drive, I counted 7 dead badgers. Animal lovers are so often in denial about what happens in the natural world. For example, they oppose fox hunting, and yet ignore the damage that foxes do to poultry flocks. This is one of the main reasons why farmers rear poultry indoors, which animal lovers also deplore. Our cuddly pet cats devastate bird life and small wild animals. Dogs off the leash chase rabbits, and very often chase sheep as well, with devastating results. Lambs are aborted, and many sheep have their throats ripped out because dogs are not kept on leashes on country walks. Facts have to be faced, and they are very often quite brutal. It is now emerging that polecats prey on grey squirrels and that red squirrel numbers rise as a result. Roll on the day when we have wild polecats again in Hampshire. So writes Keith Webb of Quarry Road, Winchester.
This next letter is about badgers and TB, and it's from Christine Compton. Sir, Anne Gosling, in her letter, Chronicle Letters, April the 5th, suggests that farmers cannot afford to vaccinate their cattle against TB. In fact, the opposite is true. Vaccination of cattle against TB is forbidden in this country by edict of DEFRA. I would welcome the chance to protect my animals from TB, whatever the cost. Christine Compton, Diva Dexter's, Western Lane, Mitchell-Dever.
This letter is not about badgers, it's about Russians. It's written by Glyn Llewellyn. Over the top, it's titled. Sir, your columnist, Mr. Aziz, oversteps the mark with his xenophobic comments on Russians in this week's issue, Chronicle April the 5th. Whatever his opinions of the actions of the current Russian government, I suggest he reconsiders his depiction of Russians as swaggering, thick-set, scowling, glowering, dripping in diamonds and furs, conveying palpable menace, and, above all, having too much money. The impact of such generalised abuse cannot be excused by merely adding that those I met seemed reasonable. Would he use the same language about any other national or racial group? That was written by Glyn Llewellyn of Marnhill Rise, Winchester.
Christine Knight writes about coloured blocks. Sir, Elizabeth Thorne suggests using artificial grass to make Winchester's security blocks less of an eyesore, as in the Chronicle letters of April the 5th. In 2005, the Colour Factory painted the city's bollards, bringing vitality and colour to the streets. Their bold and varied designs still bring a smile to both residents and visitors. Could this local talent be used again to convert the bleak blocks into attractive assets? So writes Christine Knight of Tegdown Meads, Winchester.
This next one is a letter of thanks, and it's from Janet Reed, Charity Fundraising Committee Member. Sir, the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor David McLean, wishes to thank all those who donated monies to his picture in coin collection on Saturday, April the 7th, at the Buttercross Winchester for his charities, Multiple Sclerosis Society, Canine Partners, and Bishop Waltham North Pond Conservation Group. £230 was raised. Mr. Mayor said it was a fun day getting to both meet visitors and residents of Winchester. That's from Janet Reed, Charity Fundraising Committee Member, Forest Road, Denmead.
Toby Roberts writes, prospering. Sir, we read with interest in the Chronicle, March 29th, your article with the headline, Fears Over Death of Winchester. Whilst we welcome all input and assistance from the Chronicle to try and help our troubled city, I would just like to add that not all of Winchester is dying. D&G Hardware in St George's Street continues to prosper and support our wonderful band of loyal customers. One easy short-term help from the City Council to ease the current problems would be more town centre parkings. And there are simple solutions to this if only they ask a bleak listen. That was written by Toby Roberts, D&G Hardware, St George's Street, Winchester.
That concludes the letters, and we now on move on to items of historical interest, and we have them from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
200 years ago, on Monday, April the 13th, 1818. On Monday evening, His Royal Highness Prince Kaburg arrived at Worthy on a visit to the Reverend Dr. Short, with whom he remained until Wednesday morning, when he continued his journey to Claremont. On Tuesday, he went to inspect our cathedral, the college, and St. Cross, at each of which places he was received by the head and the members of several committees, with every mark of becoming honour and respect. He had signified his intention of visiting them a few days before, but as was understood, he wished to come as privately as possible. The bells of the cathedral and the churches were not rung. His Royal Highness came attended only by Dr. Short, Sire R. Gardner, and Dr. Stockman. He arrived at the south door of the cathedral at about 11:30 and was received at the steps by the Reverend Mr. Poulter, the Vice Dean, the Reverend Mr. Garnier, the Chancellor of the Diocese, and such other of the prebendaries as were then in residence. His Royal Highness Prince Leopold was first conducted into the chapter room.
100 years ago, Saturday, April the 13th, 1918, another large convoy of wounded from the front, consisting of 62 cot cases and 95 sitting cases, arrived at Winchester on Saturday afternoon at 1:45 p.m. Under the Hampshire Automobile Club organisation, the following assistance was rendered to the military authorities: two Hampshire Automobile Club ambulances, the Marsh Court Ambulance, cars kindly lent by Major Heyman, Miss Braithwaite, Miss Johnson, Mr. H.C. Head, Mr. W.E. Butt, Mr. C.F. Wood, Mrs. Dutton, Mrs. Tidy, Mr. H. Garl, Mrs. Legg, Mr. F.J. Matthews, Messrs. Redman and Co., and the Motor Hire Company. The American forces also again assisted with two ambulances and three touring cars. The train was cleared in just over an hour.
50 years ago was Saturday, April the 15th, 1968. The Winchester Group Hospital Management Committee, covering 15 hospitals, has been allocated £2.5 million for current financial year to cover running expenses. The hospitals seem certain to work to a tight budget under the new government measures for economy, and the ministry decision that any price increase during the year must be met from this sum. Already this year, the committee have only been able to allocate for maintenance costs less than half the sum allocated last year, an indication of the restraint necessary to work within this budget.
25 years ago, Thursday, April the 8th, 1993. A Winchester resident has been hailed as a hero after he chased two men through the city following an attempted armed robbery at a petrol station. The 22-year-old unemployed man gave chase, knowing one of the suspects was wielding a rifle. In the early hours of Wednesday morning, an assistant at Market Service Station, Andover Road, was threatened by a man wearing a balaclava. He pointed a long-barreled weapon, thought to be a rifle or an air rifle, at the glass kiosk. The assistant dived behind the wall and called the police. The incident happened at 2:20 a.m. A man walking through the cattle market car park saw a second man, also wearing a balaclava, opposite the garage. The two suspects then made off on foot towards Hyde Close, chased by the witness. They ran into Hyde Road, eventually reaching the recreation ground. The man with the weapon ran off towards Abbots Barton, while the other man ran through Winchester Art College, past the police station, pursued by the witness, who then lost track of him.
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial, which will be followed by Letter from Westminster, and then we will have First Person.
This is the editorial comment. The Bright Future of Independent Shops is the title. The closure of businesses that have provided a good service to tens of thousands of customers over decades is always sad. This week, we report that Wilds Sports on Jury Street and Creative Crafts on the Square are closing their doors for the last time, a victim of the online revolution and increasing rents and rates. Danny Caunter, the owner of Wilds Sports, in a statement we have published in full elsewhere in this newspaper, also cited the lack of parking and the Christmas market, among other things. Lynn Simmons of Creative Crafts believes other independents will depart this year. No doubt this will be ammunition for those who say Winchester is dying. No, Winchester is not dying, but it's changing, as it has constantly changed since it was founded by the Romans. Nowhere stays still except places like Pompeii, buried under a mountain of volcanic ash. People talk about the end of the independence as if it's a new thing, seemingly oblivious to the fact that Marks and Spencer, Boots, W.H. Smith, Sainsbury's, Debenhams and others have been here for years and years. The High Street will carry on changing, and if you actually analyse the facts rather than what people feel, you would see that independent-owned shops and other businesses have done well in Winchester. There is no reason why that cannot continue.
Letter from Westminster is written by George Hollingbury, who is Member of Parliament for Mearn Valley. The coordinated international response to the poisoning of Sergei and Yulia Skripal in Salisbury at Britain's behest is a firm rebuke to Russian aggression. It also shows that Brexit will do nothing to harm our security or the security of the EU. It remains an overarching continental issue, an issue Britain has power and influence in, and an issue that will unite Europe and NATO countries in the common purpose that has kept the continent at peace for more than 70 years. It is most welcome and unprecedented that action to expel Russian diplomats has taken by so many countries. Putin will respond, and probably has by the time you are reading this, but it is good Britain, the EU and the US have done it, and will give him pause for thought in his ambitions to destabilise and intimidate. It shows Britain has many friends and much influence, despite what some doomsdayers might like to think, and it's a huge diplomatic success for the Prime Minister, who has taken a tough stand on what is an outrageous attack on British soil. From the start, Parliament has been united across all parties for the action taken by the government, with the exception of one isolated figure in the form of Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn. His early actions were very disappointing and unusual too. There has been a noble tradition of Labour leaders fully supporting a Conservative Prime Minister in times of trouble, from Clement Attlee standing fully behind Winston Churchill in 1940 to Michael Foot's support of Margaret Thatcher's actions during the 1982 Falklands War. National interest must always trump party politics, and the national interest here is about tackling a resurgent and aggressive Russia who thinks it can try and murder people in a Wiltshire cathedral city. Not a world war or an invasion, I grant, but still very serious. Mr. Corbyn came late to the party, his early position, I suspect, influenced by his inner circle. Moving forward, we must continue to exert pressure on Russia and counter its aggression diplomatically, technologically and economically. In particular, we have to continue to work closely with their European allies to show unequivocally that security cooperation is here to stay for the UK and Europe post-Brexit. The PM has always been absolutely clear that the security cooperation will continue after we leave the EU because of the common values we share with our European friends. The last few weeks have shown this is absolutely vital, and if any aggressor thinks the UK will not stand with the EU in defence of those shared common values, they are most certainly wrong. Underpinning what has happened over the last few weeks is the NATO alliance, the organisation that has played the most prominent part in keeping peace in Europe since 1945. Support from the United States through NATO remains the most potent check to Russia. People have sometimes thought it a Cold War hangover without modern relevance. In these uncertain times, that's incorrect. It's written by George Hollingbury, who's the Member of Parliament for Mearn Valley.
George Hayter writes on a nicer name for a landlord. My poor wife phoned to say she had been traumatised by a plague of dead insects. Voice trembling, She told me she had got home earlier that evening and gone into the lounge. There she was disgusted to see hundreds of flies littering our furniture and the carpet. Some were still alive, she wailed over the phone. A handful were flying around the room, and a few had escaped under the door and found their way to other rooms. There was nothing I could do. I was stuck in London, and frankly, grateful to be absent from the shocking invasion of our rented house. The ordeal wasn't over yet, my wife warned. Although she had swept up most of the bodies, reinforcement flies were still coming from somewhere. We agreed that the source was almost certainly a rotting dead bird inside the lounge wood stove. Since we had started renting that house, twice we had been shocked when a hapless bird had travelled down the chimney and become imprisoned in the stove. Our landlord had chained the stove shut to prevent us using it because of a fire insurance requirement. The house was vulnerable to fire because it was thatched. The first time a bird got stuck, we had guests for the weekend. We spent an uneasy Saturday evening with them, sitting in the lounge, trying to ignore the pitiful fluttering of wings. After my wife's encounter with the flies, our landlord finally relented and arranged for the chimney pot to be capped with a bird-proof net. We had already been aggravated by landlord lethargy over dodgy plumbing and non-closing doors. Other people renting their homes have told us similar tales of owner inertia. I wonder if too many private landlords are failing to provide a fair service to their tenants. My wife and I are beginning to question the wisdom of living in rented homes rather than being owner-occupiers. We may not be the only people thinking that way. A pity, because a widespread rental sector is important for a flexible UK economy. Plentiful and varied homes for rent make workforce mobility possible. I am afraid too many landlords see their property as a cash cow rather than a business requiring investment. As well as being a tenant, I am also a landlord. Our children have left the nest, and so we let out the family home and rent a smaller house to live in. Being both tenant and landlord gives insight. Now we try to look upon the tenants living in our family home as customers rather than bothersome nuisances who exist only to pay us rent. Our cheerful aim is to keep them happy. Some tenants can be careless or even dishonest, but I reckon most are responsible people where they are well served. I've been asking myself why we British seem prone to arrogance when we become landlords. Could it be a linguistic effect? The English word landlord makes it sound like a job where you can lord it over people. Landlord certainly doesn't suggest humility. It's a one-word personification of presumptuous enrichment and haughty inaction. It may have a picturesque medieval ring to it that makes you think the word should be preserved, but I think its survival might be hampering the modern lettings industry. I can think of no comparable job title. When we stay in a hotel, we don't expect to be dealing with a hotel lord, and when I take my car for a service, I would try to avoid a garage lord. The word landlord should be erased from modern life, starting with a change to the law to require use of a more appropriate term in all new leases. The updated job title for landlord could be tenant server, or perhaps accommodator. More folksy might be homesmith. For a slicker, quicker title, how about Make Home or Homer?
The 2018 Annual General Meeting of the Winchester Talking Newspaper will be held on Tuesday the 15th of May at 2 p.m. in the Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall. If you plan to attend, we'd be grateful if you could let John Richards, our chairman, know that you will be coming. Lighting up times, sunrise this time is around about 10 past 6 in the morning, and the sunset round about 8 o'clock in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. We now continue with items of general news interest.
Molly's Den reopens. Kevin Colick, Winchester's big issue seller, cut the ribbon to relaunch Molly's Den Antiques Emporium at Eastern Lane, now under the ownership of MD Emporium Limited. Stephen Berry, Emporium Manager, said, "We are delighted that Kevin agreed to come and cut the ribbon for us during our Easter promotion, where there were free Easter eggs for the children and the Royal Tees Band performed. It was a very successful day." Mr. East Rigby, MD Emporium's Managing Director, said, "Since buying the Molly's Den Emporium Group at the end of last year, we've carried out several improvements, including the reopening of the cafe. Our new manager, Stephen Berry, has done a great job filling the Emporium with new and interesting independent traders. The venue has become so popular that we now have a waiting list for traders. The Emporium is home to 100 traders selling their original wares, vintage, antique, retro, contemporary and handmade. The range is massive, and there is something to suit every budget and style. Molly's Den, under previous ownership, had been embroiled in a long planning battle with the City Council over its use of another building in Winnell. The City Council, in a statement, said, 'The council understands that Molly's Den has moved into a different building on Eastern Lane. The business had relocated into an A1 unit, which was formerly a fabric warehouse. An A1 unit can operate as a retail outlet. Given this context, the business would not need to apply for planning permission.'"
Memorial service for Ronnie. Tributes will be paid to a late Winchester pensioner who became a viral star for his high street performances. Twinkle Toad Ronnie Burgess became a social media star when he was filmed dancing to buskers and his moves posted online. He showed that no one is ever too old to do what they enjoy. Sadly, Ronnie passed away earlier this year, but on Wednesday, April the 18th, St John's will be holding a memorial to the city icon in their chapel in the Broadway. The group is inviting anyone who would like to pay their respects to Ronnie, with the event taking place at 2 p.m. As previously reported, Ronnie had been a dancer with his wife, but when she passed away, he decided to carry on. He would spend hours on the high street, grooving to music and chatting to passers-by. In 2014, he told the Chronicle, "I just love doing it. We all love dancing. Dancing keeps you fit." The pensioner, who was 90 when he died, had been strutting his stuff on the streets of Winchester since the death of his wife Dorothy in 1998. "She was a very good dancer," he said. "We went everywhere. I'd just do what I feel like," he said. "But you can't do anything too quick at my age. I'm going to keep dancing until I die." And he did, dancing up until late last year. Many people remember him from working some 40 years ago for Hancock's electrical shop on Jury Street. A neighbour at St John's Almshouses on the Broadway, Derek Harper, said shortly after his death, "He was a lovely person, with a ready smile, a great dancer, an expert ballroom dancer. He was well liked at St John's." Mr Harper said Ronnie had attended organised ballroom sessions, but when they ceased, he took his dancing onto the streets. He just decided to carry on, dancing up the high street in front of the buskers. He was a cheerful, smiley person. He was a little person, but in character, he was quite big. In recent years, Ronnie moved from St John's to the charity's Moorside home at Derngate. Clive Cook, the director of St John's, said he was a fantastic guy. He was so incredibly social. There has been a strong reaction to his death at St John's. He was a lively, engaging character. He came into our office every day to chat to people, and he attended many of our social events. He was forever singing and dancing. He was dancing until as recently as Christmas, added Mr. Cook. Footage of Ronnie propelled him to stardom in the city, with scores of shoppers stopping him to praise his moves and even to join in.
Marathon wheelchair rides raise £2,000. A campaigner is already preparing for his next challenge after completing a marathon fundraiser. John Sennett raised more than £2,000 for Crohn's and Colitis UK after completing 21 marathons in a wheelchair at Winchester Sports Stadium over the space of 4 weeks. Southampton man John started his 21 marathons on March the 10th, aiming to complete them in as many days. But due to the snowfall brought by the beast from the east and the Winchester Sports Stadium being closed over the weekend, over the Easter break, the fundraiser was pushed back by 6 days. But that didn't stop him from finishing what he started, with the main aim to raise awareness of Crohn's disease. John received support from a number of famous faces, including runner Paula Radcliffe, wheelchair basketball player Aide Adepitan, and Saints legend Francis Benali, as well as Eastleigh-raised BBC Radio 1 DJ Scott Mills and his co-presenter Chris Stock. "The messages helped," he said. "The online support was amazing. When I was at my low points during the challenge, I remembered all those who had been behind me from the start and wanted to see me succeed," John said. However, John's fundraising escapades don't end there. On April the 25th, he will be raising funds in aid of mental health charity Young Minds by attempting to lift 100,000 kilograms in the space of a day.
Friends review of its operations. The Friends of Winchester Hospital are to make a £175,000 donation towards the building of the new hospice, Burrell House, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Patrick Piper, Friends Treasurer, said a further donation of about £50,000 will be made to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for equipment, with several applications from the medical staff, wards and departments under consideration. These donations will have a huge impact on the Friends' finances, as it's been necessary to realise all its investments to raise the funds. "The work of the charity is now set to be scaled down," the charity has revealed. The Friends' trustees have recently been undertaking a review of its activities. A further reason for the review is the Friends' limited ability in fundraising, largely because of the advancing age of the trustees and lack of fresh blood. Richard Chisnell, Friends' chairman, said the decision has been taken to reduce operations, with proposals for the future to be put to the members in due course. During the intervening period, donations will continue to be received by the Friends, with fundraising in Winchester being undertaken by the North Hampshire Medical Fund. This Basingstoke-based charity employs full-time fundraising staff and already contributes towards the purchase of equipment for the RHCH. Donna Green, Deputy Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, said, "We are very grateful to the Friends of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for this generous donation and their support for Winchester Hospice, which will be an important development for Winchester and the surrounding area. It would be great to get the whole community to help us raise the £2.5 million we need to turn Burrell House into the hospice, and this donation is a fantastic step in the right direction. Thank you.
Former Tory won't stand for election. A Winchester councillor who was fired from a garage after stealing money will not be running in next month's city council elections. As previously reported, James Burns, who is currently an independent councillor for Wanton and Michelover, was rejected by the city's Conservative group when he made an application to rejoin earlier this year. Councillor Burns stood down from the ruling Conservative group after the Chronicle uncovered that he had been fired from his job at the garage. The former cabinet member was investigated by police after an allegation that he had stolen £180 from the Budgeon shop at Williams Garage in Main Road, Otterbourne. The former Winchester prison officer, who had previously held the portfolio for transport and professional services, had been set to stand for the Hampshire County Council elections in the Itchen Valley division last year, but dropped out. No criminal charges were brought as the matter was resolved through a community resolution order, which can only be applied where there is an admission of guilt. It is not a conviction or a caution. Following Councillor Burns' decision, his seat will now be contested by Conservative candidate Patrick Cunningham, chairman of Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council, Liberal Democrat Ian Gordon, chairman of the Kingsworthy Parish Council's Planning and Highways Committee, and Labour candidate Andrew Adams, a Michelover Parish Council. In the Alresford and Itchen Valley ward, Tory councillor Ernest Jeffs will be standing down, with Alresford Town Council chairman Margot Power running for the Lib Dems alongside Conservative and Town Councillor Irene Spencer and Labour's Lee Hayes. Lib Dem councillor Nikki Elks will also be standing down in St Bartholomew's ward, with Kathleen Becker standing in her place. The other candidates standing there are Reginald Hum, Conservative, Philip Ainsworth, Labour, David Walker-Nix, Green Party, and Francis Baxter, UKIP. In total, the ruling Conservatives, who currently have a majority of four, and Labour will be standing in all 15 wards involved in the election. Lib Dems will be standing in all except Bishop's Waltham, and the Green Party will be fielding seven candidates, and UKIP will field one. The election will take place on Thursday, May the 3rd. Sir Vince Cable, leader of the Liberal Democrats, visited Winchester last week to talk to students and party members at Winchester University, kicking off the party's election campaign in the city. Mr Cable took questions from students with a focus on higher education and Brexit. Lib Dem councillor Martin Todd said a larger audience turned out to see Mr Cable.
10 things to help stem the decline in native wildlife. Many of us will know that our wildlife is in real trouble. It's not that unusual to hear someone say, "There aren't as many birds around here as there used to be." Or, "When I was a child, I remember seeing lots of squashed insects on my dad's windscreen." And of course, they're right. Since 1966, we have lost some 40 million birds across the UK. In Hampshire, we estimate that over the last half century, we have lost perhaps 800,000. So why the sudden and steep declines? I suspect you already know the answers. House building, intensively managed farmland, disturbance of breeding sites by dogs and people, cyclists, walkers, ripping out of hedgerows, climate change, road building, deer grazing, pollution, plastic waste in the seas. And at the same time this has been happening, there are more of us concerned about nature than ever before. Some estimates suggest there are more than 2 million people in the UK who are members of a wildlife organisation. The charity I am director of for, A. Rocha, UK, has come up with a list of 10 species we can all take action for to help reduce the declining numbers. A house martin, rapidly decreasing summer visitor from Africa, buy an artificial nest for these amazing birds. Honeybee, in real trouble. Leave an area of your garden to grow or plant wild native flower bigs to provide a seasonal source of food. Slowworm, a legless lizard and completely harmless, create a compost heap and put down an old piece of felting for them to shelter under in winter. Spotted flycatcher. If you have a bigger garden, then do buy a flycatcher box and help save one of the fastest declining birds in Hampshire. Keep edges of the garden unmown for insects. The common toad. Often run over by cars, and fewer ponds mean fewer toads. So dig a mini pond or buy or make a toad house. Hedgehog. Also rapidly disappearing thanks to climate change and house building. Cut a small hole in your garden fence so they can travel and encourage your neighbour to do the same. Common swift. An amazing bird that sleeps on the wing but still needs a nest site. Easy to buy and erect a swift box. Best for urban areas where swift is still fairly common. Butterflies. Grow buddleia and other garden plants that are attractive to our butterflies. Our insects need your help. Song thrush. Massive declines as hedges have vanished. So why not plant a fruiting or berry-producing shrub that the thrushes will love? And lastly, fungi. In autumn, don't assume they are poisonous and chop them down. Let them grow as they will provide food for small mammals and insects.
Pledge to tackle homelessness. Hampshire could be in line for a hefty grant to help the growing number of rough sleepers. It comes as the government has pledged to put together a team of experts to determine where a £30 million fund should go. Ministers say they want to, quote, break the homelessness cycle once and for all, unquote. And councils with high levels of rough sleepers will be helped, said Communities Secretary Sajid Javid. Mr. Javid said the latest plans were part of the government's work to halve rough sleeping by 2022 and eliminate it by 2027. Currently, it's unknown how much the county council or other authorities will be given, although Councillor David Shields, Cabinet Member for Health and Community Safety in Southampton, is concerned it may not be enough. He said, "My worry is that the lion's share of the grant will go to the big urban areas like London and Manchester. We have just as much of a problem here in the south, albeit more spread." But despite his concerns, the cash would still be welcomed. "We would definitely put the money towards additional hostel places," said Councillor Shields. The rough sleeping team will be made up of experts from government departments and agencies that have specialist knowledge in areas such as housing, mental health and addiction. Mr. Javid promised that £100,000 of funding will go to frontline rough sleeping workers across the country to ensure they have the right skills to deal with the issue. A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said, "Any additional funding to tackle homelessness is to be welcomed. This would normally go direct to Hampshire's housing authorities, who have statutory obligations for tackling the issue. We will continue to work closely with our district and borough partners to ensure that homeless people with adult social care needs are identified at the earliest opportunity so that the appropriate support can be put in place."
Royal wedding. Winchester Cathedral is taking part in the celebrations to mark the royal wedding next month. It will celebrate the marriage of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle by live streaming their wedding ceremony on May the 19th. Visitors will be able to enjoy the ceremony in the cathedral nave from 12 noon to 1 p.m, but celebrations will continue until 5 p.m. in the outer close, with activities for the whole family to enjoy. Activities will include Morris dancing, a bouncy cathedral, and pop-up stalls provided by our local churches. There will also be an opportunity to write a prayer for the couple on bunting that will be hung around the close. There will also be prayer stations and spaces for quiet reflection available around the cathedral throughout the day. Visitors are encouraged to join in with the festival atmosphere by bringing a picnic to eat, but street food provided by the cathedral refectory will also be available. This celebration is being held as part of Thy Kingdom Come, a 9-day event of prayer being held by churches globally. Thy Kingdom Come marks the days between Ascension and Pentecost, and many events are being held by churches across the country from May the 10th to the 19th to celebrate the occasion.
Striding out to raise funds for the proposed hospice. A group of nurses swapped their uniforms for walking boots to raise money for the Winchester Hospice. The Winchester Rural East Integrated Care Team, known as the WRE, are renaming themselves the WRE Hospice Hikers for the challenge. They walked around the 25-mile patch they cover on Saturday, April the 7th, to raise vital funds and awareness of the hospice. The team of eight set off from Alsford Surgery on Station Road before heading to West Meon Surgery and Mansfield Park Surgery in Fourmarks, and then finished back at Alsford Surgery. Community staff nurse Sarah Henschel said, "We are all really passionate about end-of-life care, and so we were thrilled when we heard that a new hospice was going to be set up in Winchester. This much-needed service will really benefit our patients, but it does need support and money to make it happen." Lou Bryant, Integrated Clinical Lead, speaking beforehand, said, "We have all been training together, which has been great fun, and everyone is excited for the big day. There will be some tough moments, but everyone in the team is there to support each other, and knowing it's for such a good cause will make those challenging parts that little bit easier. We want to say a big thank you to everyone who has supported us so far, especially Andy Salter, the owner of the Home Shop in Winchester, who provided the team with personalised T-shirts, which we couldn't be happier with. Over £2.5 million is needed to convert Burrell House, next to the Winchester Hampshire County Hospital, into a hospice with 10 inpatient beds and offering palliative care and day services." Fundraising manager for the hospice, Judith Charmer, said, "We are incredibly grateful for the nurses' support."
Spat between Tories over sports centre. A Winchester councillor has questioned the fitness of the city's sports chief to lead a committee, despite both belonging to the same party. Conservatives Kim Gottlieb and Lisa Griffiths, neither of whom are up for election next month, have continued a row after heated exchanges during a recent meeting. Councillor Gottlieb tried to raise a point outside of the agreed agenda, which he felt was important for public understanding, but was continually interrupted by Chairwoman Councillor Griffiths. Eventually, Chief Executive Laura Taylor intervened before the meeting progressed. Now Councillor Gottlieb has questioned Councillor Griffiths' fitness after the row continued in emails seen by the Chronicle. After asking to see copies of plans for the £40 million project to build a new sports centre at Bar End in an email that appears to have been sent in the early hours of April the 7th, Councillor Griffith said, up early or up late? Experience in building leisure centres? Kim from Penguin Swimming Club pointed out to us a recent meeting, which you were unable to attend, that we should listen to our experts. She said they know their stuff, and as far as she is concerned, Mike Lawless from LA Architects knows his stuff. Councillor Gottlieb responded, your email does nothing but call into question your fitness to be chairman of this committee. Stupid, sarcastic comments aside, I have simply asked for plans so that I can reflect on them before they go forward for discussion at committee or wherever else. This means that when we meet the, quote, experts, unquote, we are prepared in our own thinking and then make the best use of the time available with them. Your position as chairman does not entitle you to constantly deprive the rest of us of what is essentially public information. And Councillor Gottlieb added, you have no valid reason for instructing officers not to respond to requests for information, and I would like to receive the layouts presented at the recent public meeting tomorrow. The row relates to plans to build a multi-million pound leisure centre at Bar End, as well as surrounding facilities to replace the outdated River Park Leisure. A number of councillors and campaigners have slammed the decision to build an 8-court sports hall rather than a 12-court hall. Councillor Griffiths has been approached for comment.
6-week closure for Village Road. Hampshire Highways will be undertaking drainage repair replacement works in Spring Lane, Colon Common. The works between Main Road and Upper Moors Road are programmed to start on April the 23rd and are expected to last for 6 weeks. For safety, the road will be closed to through traffic, except for local residents' access, which will be maintained. It's part of works being undertaken by Operation Resilience, which, as the County Council says, is a long-term strategy to make Hampshire's roads more resilient to the effects of extreme weather and heavy traffic. Information boards have been installed to provide advance warning. Residents and businesses have been notified by letter.
Deposit backed. Civic chiefs in Hampshire have supported a deposit return scheme to boost recycling of drinks bottles and cans. Government ministers have announced that all drinks containers in England, whether plastic, glass or metal, will be covered by the scheme. Around 40 countries already have versions of the system, which typically charges a deposit that is refunded when consumers return the drinks container for recycling. Costs range from around 6p in Australia to 22p in Germany, where recycling rates are more than 90%. A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said, "We would welcome any initiative that could potentially increase recycling and reduce waste, particularly single-use plastics. Our waste infrastructure is set up to recycle plastic bottles and cans collected from households, and it is not yet clear how widespread the proposed deposit facilities would be, which is a consideration in a large rural county like Hampshire. Nevertheless, the authority did raise a concern." The spokesperson added, "Plastic bottles and cans are already recycled as part of the curbside recycling collection in Hampshire. Taking plastic bottles and cans out of this recycling stream could impact on local councils' recycling operations." The scheme has been greeted with mixed views. Charity A Plastic Planet, which champions plastic-free supermarket aisles, said while the move was a, quote, great milestone, unquote, it was not the ultimate solution to the plastics crisis. Co-founder Sean Sutherland said even if plastic bottles are used or recycled, they will almost always end up in the environment sooner or later, and most plastic can only be recycled several times before it becomes unusable.
Heritage Open Day. The theme of this year's Winchester Heritage Open Days is Extraordinary Woman. The event, the biggest yet, will run from September the 13th to the 16th. Meanwhile, organiser Nikki Gottlieb was hailed for her work at the Mayor of Winchester's Community Awards night recently. Nominating for her for an award were fellow volunteer Becky Brown and programme supporter Councillor Rose Burns, who said, "Nikki puts her heart and soul into organising the programme for Heritage Open Days. In the past 3 years, the programme of events has increased tenfold, and with this year's programme, it will be bigger again." Councillor Burns added, "It takes a huge amount of work all the year round, and Nikki totally deserves this recognition." Over 10,000 visitors attended the 2017 events, and the programme has grown from 6 events in 2015 to over 60 in 2017.
Fundraising push to get City Scouts to global celebration. Two Winchester Scouts are raising money for a once-in-a-lifetime trip to the organisation's World Jamboree in West Virginia next year. Tona Loving and Jamie Benwell, both 12, are from the 3rd Winchester Worthies, and after a challenging selection camp, they have been chosen as two of 136 Scouts from Hampshire to join more than 40,000 young people and 20,000 volunteers from across the globe into the USA. Tona said, "We need to raise £3,790 each to cover costs, such as flights and insurance, as well as our training, which we need to complete beforehand." The pair will be organising multiple fundraising events, including stalls at markets, talent nights, discos, film afternoons and bingo, as well as taking part in sponsored activities and a 10-mile hike. They have already completed a sponsored climb with Tonna's friends from her climbing club and Tonna and Jamie's friends from Scouts. Sponsored by Golden Gecko of Romsey, they managed to climb nearly twice the height of the tallest mountain in West Virginia, Bunker Hill, which 3,498 metres high. Between them, it took the equivalent of 18 hours. They asked local MP Steve Bryan for help, who donated a bottle of House of Commons wine signed by the Prime Minister Theresa May to be auctioned at an upcoming event. Mr. Bryan said, "I was really interested to hear about Donna and Jamie's activity ahead of the World Scout Jamboree in 2019. I was a cub and a scout myself and absolutely loved every single moment of my time, my only regret being that the dates never fell in a way that gave me the opportunity to attend a jamboree."
Criticism of big rise in civic PR machine. Plans to increase spending on communications managers at Winchester City Council by £213,000 have been slammed as a backroom decision without any public scrutiny. The decision was included in a draft portfolio holder decision notice, which lays out how to spend the Conservative lead council's £950,000 underspend in the last financial year. Normally, only councillors see the draft proposals before they are finally approved. Lucille Thompson, leader of the Liberal Democrat group, said, "At a time when there's so much that needs doing on planning enforcement, on our heritage and archaeology, and on recycling, why are the Conservatives planning to spend such a huge amount of extra money on spin doctors?" The Conservatives weren't willing to come forward with their proposal for last year's underspend during the last council meeting, and now we know why. "I'm appalled that they're trying to take this decision behind closed doors. Not only is it a waste of public money, but the public have also not been given a chance to have their say." The £213,000 is part of the £997,000 being set aside to help the council deal with the three major ongoing projects: Silver Hill 2, officially known as the Central Winchester Regeneration Project, Station Approach, and the new Sports Centre at Bar End, officially known as the Winchester Sport and Leisure Park. Other proposals for spending the surplus money are £250,000 towards ideas from the yet-to-be-published Winchester Movement Strategy and £100,000 on environmental enhancements.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and thanks also to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.